The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, this is Shannon, the producer of the SDR show. On today's episode, we have Ralph Sutton joined by guest co-host Jim Florentine, and together they interview band members Sam and Jake Kiska of the band Greta Van Fleet. Really fun episode. Remember, we do the show live every single Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. That's absolutely free. The best way to support the show, though, is to go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use promo code SDR. You will get a 1 week free trial, which gives you access to every single episode of the show that we have ever done. Here it is right now, the Greta Van Fleet episode of the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. In with me for the first time as a co-host, or the second time as a co-host, I think. But like the fourth time on the show. Does that sound right? I think that's about right. Has that new album, Terrorizing Telemarketers Volume 7. A beloved comedian and the Everybody is Awful podcast. It is Jim Florentine. How are you, buddy?
I'm good.
Who were you in studio with me with? I can't remember. It wasn't that long ago.
I don't remember. No, I can't.
Rock band that was just in studio. I don't remember what it is. But right now, in the heavily better late than never category, I would say definitely on the late side, a band that I have fucking loved for, I think we're talking about a decade at this point. It is Jake and Sam from Greta Van Fleet. How are you, boys?
Hey, namaskar.
We are kind of honing in our spiritual awareness.
I was going to say, you guys are more known as Oliver and Kalabunga than you are as Jake and Sam, I guess, right? Is that a fair assessment?
Hey, man, my video's got like 200,000 views. It's famous. Like,
that's it.
Next comes the cookbook. After that, the restaurants licensing my name out.
It's all right.
And then selling out.
That's it. It's all just a flash in the pan of deep theatrics, really.
Let's jump right into that question. Sam, are you actually vegan, or you're just doing it for the goof?
There's definitely
it's not illegal.
There's nothing illegal about not being.
No, I'm just curious. I mean, I think we should all eat more vegetables for sure. But are you vegan? Is just the. It seems like a fair question. You're putting out fucking videos as a vegan chef. It'd be nice to know if you're living the life. That's all.
Look, Ralph, don't test me.
All right, fair enough. And by the way.
No. Let's talk about this. Okay. I am pescatarian. So I go fish. I love oysters. But mostly vegetables and tofu and that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, when's the last time you guys were in New York?
Honestly, it's
Topanga, I think, or the Django, baby.
That's Django. Yeah, the jazz club.
Jim, where did you see them? You saw them somewhere in New York, Jim, right?
That's Rebecca.
Yeah, no, I saw them when they first came out at the Mercury Lounge when you guys just had the EP out. That was probably like 6-7 years ago.
I think it's actually like almost 10 at this point, which is crazy.
That's we played Mercury in Berlin, I think, the first time we went to New York. Mm-hmm.
That's cool, because I helped build the largest vegan brand in New York City. I used to work in the food industry. I don't do that anymore. Yeah, but I'm not vegan. I just do think we should all eat more vegetables.
Oh, just capitalize on
it. I just capitalize. That's my money. I'm a Jew. That's how we do it. We make money. Leave us alone, for God's sake. So, so Jake, by the way, I said this at the top of the show to your, I guess, publicist, that I am also a twin, but my story is far more unique and better than your story, because you're just 5 minutes apart. Big fucking deal, right? I was born New Year's Eve at 11:58 p.m. 1969. My twin brother, 4 minutes later, different day, different year, different decade, because he was born in the 70s and I was born in the 60s. Top that.
Wow. So you were like smoking weed and wearing.
Yeah, I was a cool 60s baby. Right.
Glasses.
Yeah, exactly.
He was wearing like clogs.
Yeah, he's like doing like.
Yeah. He's like, you know,
yeah, the platform.
It was disco era then, maybe.
And the Ralph, you were saying before that your mom didn't even know she was having twins. Like your brother just popped out like 9 minutes later or something.
When I came out, they realized, oh shit, there's another one, because they didn't do the sonogram. We were two or three, like 2.5 months premature. And I'm almost 6'6" and he's 5'7". So we are completely different. We don't, I'm even left-handed and he's right-handed. So we couldn't be any more different.
Did they not have modern medical science?
We're talking about 52 years ago, dude. Like they didn't just didn't do a lot of.
He on the moon.
He in 1969. He didn't know those two babies. They wrote The Wizard of Oz after Ralph. He grew up in the middle of fucking Kansas.
I didn't know.
Fair enough. All right. So a couple of topics off the top. Number one, you guys are going to be in Atlantic City in December doing a great thing with Helping Hands auction and concert with Metallica in December as well. And then something that I never knew existed. Maybe it's the first one. Lollapalooza India in January. But several shows have been put on hold because Josh, your brother, had some sort of eardrum issue. What is going on with that?
Yeah, he had an eardrum issue, and he just had an upper respiratory infection, bronchitis, I think it would be the umbrella that it falls under.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, earlier in the year, Jake had pneumonia, and I don't know what the fuck's going on. I just, like, last week, just when we got off tour and we were supposed to be playing shows, I just got this horrible, horrible flu where I just had to sleep for 2 days.
You guys are supposed to be young and strong. You're 25, 26 years old. What the fuck, guys?
I know. We feel a bit prosaic.
Yeah, I think we just have to probably drink a little bit less and then we'll be good.
What did I hear? Was it the salty dog is the Greta Van Fleet drink of choice? Am I right with that?
That is a very popular one.
It's a popular choice. I would say tequila is the subsidiary.
Sure. Yeah, I don't usually go for vodka.
Okay, I'm a silver tequila person. Jim, I called you James. Jim, are you sober or you still drink?
No, I still drink.
Yeah, I don't know. I try. Yeah. I only drink during the show usually when we're live in studio. That's my one night a week. Or if I'm on a date and I'm trying to get laid. Those are my two times that I'm drinking. Those are
the drinks of choice.
So I guess you haven't drank in a while then.
I haven't drank in a while. silver tequila is my... I do silver tequila and club soda because I'm fat and old and there's no calories in it. So that's what I do.
All right.
Jake, are you aware, and I'd love to know if you actually saw this, there is a fucking documentary about your striped blue jeans. Have you ever seen that? And did you ever realize how batshit crazy it is?
Wow, people have too much time in their hands.
There's a pair of blue jeans that you have that have a stripe down the side, and there is a 15-minute documentary about it.
Yeah, see, that was the thing. I mean, I'm not wearing them today.
I'm not wearing pants at all.
Sorry. I was quick rushing out the door. I'm gone all natural today. Yeah, those pants have probably been all around the world with me. I've probably worn those pants. I think those pants have been more places and seen more things and experienced more reluctancy and lived more life than most people.
I would say than you have would be interesting. Were they new when you purchased them, or did someone make them, or what?
They're actually old French workwear. They're like I bought them at a place called Golden Age in Los Angeles, 6 years ago, and then I haven't taken them off since. I sleep with those things. Shower.
Well, how can they make a 15-minute documentary?
I mean, it's bizarre. They show all the pictures. It's a robotic VO, and they show like the first time it was the pants were seen on stage, and then all the different times he wore it. I made it through about 6 minutes of the 15. If I'm being honest, I thought there'd be more to it, or just more like some dude or girl, I don't know, because the robotic voice is fucking obsessed with those pants. That's all I could say. And there's apparently a like Instagram account on the pants, which is fucking weird.
Unbelievable.
So the logical question that I have to ask is a couple that I'd be very mad at myself if I didn't ask. Last year or the year before, I don't know what year, because it's pandemic times, everything seems like it was 17 years ago. You guys were super viral from an SNL performance. Well, your brother's scene was from the SNL song, where there was thousands of people doing the You're the One song TikTok. Did you guys embrace it? Did it bother you? Did you be glad that, were you happy the song was getting played a million times? What was your thought on that?
Well, I think the first moment that we figured out that it was happening as we started being followed by a bunch of 12-year-olds in the tens of thousands, it just, you know, kept going. And from there, we were like, okay, what's TikTok? And we our team here explained it to us, and we said, yeah, let's make a TikTok account.
Okay, so that inspired you. Were guys were not on TikTok yet?
I don't think so.
No, it was such an inspiring thought, proposal of TikTok. It's just really artistic, really, and
you have a lot of time on the platform.
It's an elevated, really articulate, you know,
it's a platform,
subversive, intellectual platform.
Yeah.
Well, do you think you got any young fans from there, from them seeing the TikTok and the song and all that?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I think that the TikTok culture is pop culture, and it's very telling to know that your videos are, I don't know, 20 seconds or maximum.
Now it's 10 minutes. You can do 10 minutes on TikTok, I think.
You can?
Yeah, you can.
10 minutes?
Now you can do 10
minutes. I thought it was just 60 seconds.
How many TikTok followers you have?
Probably. Well, I wanted a reason to also follow a bunch of 12-year-olds, so that's why I started a TikTok account.
Well, that's your thing, Ralph.
He was born in 69. That's a
good point. No, I have a TikTok account, and I have someone run it. I never even logged in. He's like, you got millions of views on your comedy stuff. I'm like, I don't care. Good. Yeah. I won't look at it. I'm like, I can't. I'm not logging in. I'm not going to fight with people that don't understand the comedy, and I'm not dealing with any of that.
Yeah, I hate social media. I couldn't even tell you. I pay someone to post for me. I take pictures. It goes to some fucking OneDrive, and they put it up. I don't want to be bothered. I don't care.
All right, so we all have that in common here.
There's a commonality.
We all pay somebody else to do TikTok.
Yeah. The only reason why I have an Instagram account is to hit on chicks, and I'm very open about that. That's really the only dates I've gone on in the past year has been from hitting on chicks on Instagram. That's all I do. Because I'm a creep, James. I am a creep.
Yeah, it kind of comes off that way.
Hey, so now, being that three of you are related, does Danny's vote count less in the band when you're trying to make decisions?
No, I think it's a democracy. It's pretty good.
It's four corners.
So you don't get the shape without it.
So it doesn't matter at all, even though the three of you have spent a lifetime together.
Pretty much. I mean, you can probably quantify Daniel as being an equivalent brother, you know.
We have spent a lifetime together with Daniel, and yeah. I've spent two lifetimes together with my brothers.
Yeah,
I guess that's fair enough. And Sam, you always play barefoot. Does that make you feel more closely connected to the earth or something? Is that
none? You know, man.
Yeah, you know, groovy, bro.
I think it's your brother's the one that's doing the Namaste videos and those kind of things on your YouTube. But
right.
But where is that spirituality lie between the three of you?
Well, yeah, here's the thing.
It's
Josh,
more philosophy than spirituality. I'd say more linked to Anaximander and sort of Khalil Gibran and like Zarathustra, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of it kind of started off as more philosophy based. I don't know. I think anything that you can really do to get a little closer to the spiritual connection that I think you have when you're born, and you kind of lose it as you navigate this society that we've set up. Anything that can get you closer to that is great. For example, I just took a walk in the forest for an hour today, and I had like God consciousness as I was leaving, and I was just like smiling.
I have God complex, which is kind of close to that, but that's
no. I'm conscious of the God and the spiritual realm around me when I'm in the forest.
Do you guys all meditate? Is that a fair question? Do all four of you meditate or no?
No, we don't meditate.
Yeah. All right. Well, then it kind of dilutes everything you just said, in my opinion. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well,
that's
we're phonies.
It's rather counter.
Jim, do you follow any philosophers or anything like that? Do you care? Like, the only guy I ever liked was Alan Watts. Is there anybody that you like?
Alan Watts is lovely.
Eastern philosophy,
the yogis of the Himalayas.
What I don't like is every time I dive into one of these self-proclaimed gurus or people with followers, they're always human garbage. They, if you look into the person, maybe their message is nice, but so many times they just did horrible things to people. So Alan Watts is one of the few who didn't, and that helped me feel like he might be a little bit more of a truth sayer than these people who are just trying to fucking manipulate people with maybe a positive message.
Wasn't it Alan Watts who said that it wouldn't be so surprising if you went to bed and woke up one day and realized that you yourself was God, that you intended to be
the one who is the worst when I looked into him is Satguru. Oh my God. And he's so, do you know who that is, by the way, Jimmy?
No, I don't know that.
He's a, I do another podcast on health and wellness, right? And so for the first year, my co-host is really into all these people. And he would send me like the guru of the week, so to speak. And I would delve into it and look into it and see what I thought about it. And almost every time, these people were fucking garbage. And it really bothered me. I know you're supposed to separate art from the artist, but it's different when you are manipulating people with your message. That's just what we're getting.
You need context for that kind of thing, and you have to look at someone and see, okay, are they practicing what they're preaching? And you know, it may come from a spot where you're more under a microscope. Maybe everybody, if you look at them in the right way, is human garbage. Maybe this person is just an example like everybody else. Like we're all perfect examples, for instance,
Satguru, he charges donations to go do his things. But if you call it a donation, it's not taxed, even if it's mandatory. So that's kind of scummy. All right, we're getting off topic. I'm sorry. Let's get back into a happy.
Yeah, no, I want to look. I saw you guys back at the Mercury Lounge probably 7 years ago when just the EP was out. And it was all like middle-aged dudes at the show. And I'm like, man, is this the band that's going to bring young people back? Then I recently saw you over for Metallica in Pittsburgh, and I couldn't believe how many young people were into the band. It was awesome to see like these girls that were like 17, 18 years old rocking out. You guys are doing 12-minute jam songs and they're going crazy. I'm like, it made me happy to see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting the sort of evolution that we've had with I suppose audience specifically. It seems that we kind of sort of started the other way around, where when we first started playing shows, we saw a lot of, you know, a lot of older sort of audience members, which I think, you know, like relative to the sound that we've sort of curated, it makes a lot of sense.
And they don't let 16-year-olds into dive bars.
That's awesome.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
So it's interesting. So as we sort of continued on, as we see more and more, you know, people of our generations, you know, coming and showing up and sort of. You know.
It is wild, because I was telling your publicist beforehand, I did rock radio forever, right? I started my show in 99, ended it in 2016. We were on about 100 stations. And every time there'd be that next band that people thought was going to bring back rock and roll, like Buck Cherry, like Silvertide. There were all these bands that people were like, oh, this is it. This is the time rock comes back. And there's probably 10 others if I thought about it, right? This band, Greta Van Fleet, was the first time that it actually happened, where you started seeing young people embrace the music, which is wild to me. And then other bands like I love, like Joyous Wolf and other newer rock bands started to be able to get a foothold because of Greta Van Fleet. So that you are the band, and I hate to say this, and not this sounds like I'm blowing smoke up your ass, but you did bring back rock and roll for an old fuck like me that was waiting for decades for it to come back. So congratulations for doing that. I mean, last album, the new album went to number one hard rock record, Battle at Garden's Gate, and millions of fucking, you were Grammy winners. It sold millions of records. It's wild to see. I mean, as people, you seem like human garbage, but other than that, it's pretty wild.
But just that you could get young people back into rock, which they're so distracted with like 30-second TikTok videos and everything like that. And just there's no exposure to it. It's not like it was MTV back in the day where there was videos on where you can get into it. Just that you guys have done that is amazing.
It is captivating. And
there's a social referendum about it.
There's a lot that you can dig into with Greta Van Fleet. You know, the musicians, the artwork, stories behind it all, everything. I think there's a lot to sink your teeth into, a lot to explore within the universe.
I think there's a lot more depth to this sort of work. And I think what we can consider rock and roll specifically as a genre that's, I think, dynamic enough and sort of depthful enough that we sort of miss that with, you know, I guess popular music, because there isn't necessarily, there's a contrived sort of, you know, philosophy about that. So I think what's going on now is our generation is looking at something and going, wait, there's more to this. There's an idea that there's an actual piece of work that has substance and depth and complexity to it. And there's a greater, you know, purpose to a song than it just going on a radio, to being designed to go to number one, making a hit, and then dissolving instantaneously right after that. There's a sort of gravity to what we're doing.
I mean, evident by the fact that, I mean, some of the songs on this record are like 7-8 minutes long. You're not looking for that 3-minute pop hit, and you're looking to just write songs that you want to write. I think I heard somewhere that Age of the Machine was originally 15 minutes long, and you shaved it down. So it is still, but I think it's 7 minutes long or something. I'm not sure. And it is showing, and all the artwork and the symbolism of the new record, there's some thought put into it other than just, hey, let's write a catchy radio record in the hopes of hitting a couple of hits.
Right, right. And I think our goal from the very beginning is kind of changing not only the music scene in general, to kind of show more musicianship and actual, you know, songwriting, but to change kind of the way people like perceive, like something like radio, for example, they're playing Heat Above on rock radio, right next to all of the people you always hear, right next to the Foo Fighters, you know. Mm-hmm. So it catches you off guard, but it's not just like rock, it's not just loud guitars. You know, you have obviously electric guitars, there's acoustic guitars, it's mystical, there's beautiful dimension. Melody. There's
dimension.
So that's kind of what we always wanted to do, is kind of change the narrative.
But it is funny to even use the term rock radio, because as someone who used to be in rock radio, it is so meaningless now. It's more about, like, I hate to say it, but your social media platforms, the YouTube views. But the question I would ask is, I know your father is a blues musician, right? And were you guys, was anybody along the way during that first record and the first EP tried to be talked out of, hey, maybe rock isn't what we should be doing right now. Maybe we should try and do something that has a better chance of succeeding? Or was it always, we're going to be a rock band?
I don't think there was a discussion that was ever had. I think it just sort of like,
it was more like, do you like this riff?
Like, sorry, boys.
Like, oh yeah, I can play to that. And like, yeah, like, there it goes. That's rock and roll right there.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that's what I was told, that Jake, you were the one that started playing guitar very young and so into it that after the rest of your brothers realize it's not a phase, that's how the band's genesis happened. Is that right?
Well, it's like the Greta Van Fleet. Genesis is a different band, you see.
Oh, I never heard of them. Are they new, Genesis? am I right with that though? Is that what happened? Like,
yeah, I think it was, I mean, obviously I had started playing at a really early age, around 3-ish, and that sort of, that became like
I started playing guitar, I was playing about 3 years old. When I learned Freebird
and Genesis.
No, I wrote my first song.
Yeah, and so I guess these guys started coming along and it was interesting. I mean, I had always wanted to sort of form a group, but.
So do you make them thank you, like, at least once a month? Say thank you to me for.
Yeah, that's it. That's what they do. That's the least they could do.
He doesn't like to take it to the face, though. He prefers little note cards that we send him in the mail.
Right. It would be too complex.
I just have it on auto renew.
By the way, the clip, he doesn't like to take it to the face, could mean something very different taken out of context.
Well, really, Ralph?
What guru taught you that, Ralph?
All right, before we go any further, you know these guys. We love these guys. It is Yo Kratom, YoKratom.com. We've been fans forever. They've been sponsors forever. They sponsor Skankfest. They've been sponsoring the SDR show for a long time. And the coolest thing about them, you know it, you get to buy a kilo of Kratom for just $60. $60 kilos of Kratom all day. Not only that, high-quality curated Kratom their own strains, amazing customer service, and you won't find better prices anywhere. Just go to YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo and the official sponsor of the SDR show. So going back to Battle, the new record that, I mean, new, it's a little, almost a year old now, but came out in over a year old. You released it in the fucking heart of the pandemic, like right when everything was locked down. I have to imagine that was agonized over, like maybe we should hold off on this. Or is it that you just didn't want to sit around with it anymore?
The great thing that we kind of did to manipulate the situation, you know, horrible, horrible shutdown, very bad, just for the record. But we were able
to note
that, everybody. Ralph, you got that?
It's on the record.
But what we did to kind of manipulate it to work in our favor is we poured so much more time into the making of the album. All of the inside cover and all of the design and, you know, gold metallic. And we added two more songs. We filmed and filmed. All of that footage, like My Way Sin footage, that was filmed at the beginning of the pandemic when we were writing for the album after the Battle at Gardens Gate. And we had a couple of songs for the Battle at Gardens Gate that we put on there because it felt like it fit more than the other tracks that we had.
Oh, wow. Okay, that makes sense.
So it gave us a lot of time and it gave us a lot of opportunity to just go deeper and deeper and explore and create.
I read that because you did create everything in the studios and not really play live, you had to then learn how to perform these songs live because they were created in the studio.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I went to the lab and I got this arm added under my other arm.
It's pretty immediate. We call it Queen's Rules. You know, it's like Queen is a good example of that. It's such a layered record. So it's like if you can strip it down and make it sound good, it's like that it does, it's, that's all that matters.
Yeah,
so
it's like,
it's
okay,
really kind of an interesting sort of experiment for us to take something like the Battle at Gardens Gate, which is so dense and sort of cinematic and layered, and strip it down, and it almost made it more powerful.
Yes, it's in a live environment, and what we've learned this year from doing a full arena tour is that the more simple that you can make these parts is kind of the better. But for our music, some of these things are kind of wildly complicated. And sometimes it sounds complicated and it's not, or sometimes it's really complicated and it doesn't sound that way. So it's kind of about honing that in for a very reverberant, very big room with a lot of people screaming.
Context.
Jim, when you went to go see them that first time, was the single out already and you knew that, or did someone say, go check out this band?
No, the EP was out. My friend, comedian friend Dean Del Rey, turned me on to you guys, and we got in there, the place was packed and stuff. So I was already into them at that time. And just the EP was out.
Yeah, Dean Del Rey, he brought us in to do, I think he had a podcast.
He still does it. Yeah, I've done it. Yeah, I think you're sure you've done it too.
Yeah, Let There Be Talk podcast. Yeah. So Dean's like, hey, he was in New York. He's like, we're going to go see Greg. I go, I'd love to. I know the show was sold out. So we got to see you. We met you guys briefly afterwards, and he turned me on to the band.
Tape that in LA. It's on the Strip. Is it the Laugh Factory?
Yeah.
The Laugh Factory, and we were all like underage, so we had a trouble at the door. It was like
really
3 o'clock, so like the manager had to like get us in, or we snuck in, or something like that.
Snuck us into the basement,
and we're sitting down there with Dean, like drinking beer. Security comes down like halfway through, like, you guys can't be in here.
Oh, man. So we snuck back out.
I give Dean credit because when I was doing radio, I would always try and find the next band that was going to be big or the next band that like spoke to rock and roll. I remember another one that I would say went on that list of, oh, this band is going to bring back rock, was The Darkness. Everybody was talking about them for about a year and then they dissipated. Airborne would be another one. But what's great about you guys now is the second record has come out, and the second record is not a sophomore curse. It's selling well. It's doing great. There's singles on the radio, and that may, or I hate saying radio, but singles that are doing well. So that gives me hope that, you know, rock is maybe eking its way back a little bit. It feels good.
Sure. Yeah. I think the idealism, the rock and roll idealism, it's not necessarily a sound, but you know it when you hear it, you know it when you see it.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, like, you know, our generation sort of coming back, sort of swinging in a way. It's like there's a lot of rock and roll bands that are absolutely amazing that are sort of rising to the top, rising to the occasion. And it's like, it's definitely feel like there's something going on underground here.
Yeah, I'm starting to see bands like that. It's just great to see that feels like, oh, maybe. And I'd love it to be bands that I look too old to go see. That would make me happy because I want to be the oldest man there. Like, what is this fucking old geezer doing here? By the way, the biggest bone I have to pick with you, Sam, is this. They asked you somewhere, what would your last meal be? Okay, what would your last meal be? And this was his answer, Jim. Soup. Soup was his answer. Your last meal is soup? What the fuck is wrong with you?
What kind of soup?
You said you would make it yourself and it would be soup.
Well, I was obviously drunk.
Yeah,
was it an interview?
Yeah,
was it
Ralph.
I don't care. It's out there on the internet.
Yeah, soup, he's probably just busting balls. Yeah, he's drunk. Yeah, it's soup.
That. Guess what? Now this is going to be out on the internet. We're going to debunk it, okay? Here we go. You ready for this, Ralph? I'm going to Florence, Italy, and I'm going to have myself a truffle pasta with white sauce. That's it. Nothing fancy.
There you go.
Maybe a just little truffle.
Maybe a little
white sauce.
Much better. Much better than soup. Much better than soup that you made yourself, Sam. Much better than soup you made yourself.
That's pretty bad.
That's a pretty bad answer. And also, I just want to hear this one because sometimes you read internet rumors, you know if they're true. Is it true, Sam, that Jake cut off the tip of your thumb when you were kids?
That is true.
That's not nice. Why did that happen?
It was this thumb.
How did that happen?
Well, it's hard. The details are hazy for sure.
How old were we?
I think 6 and 9, probably.
Six and nine,
somewhere around there. We were just, you know, making stuff in the yard, and Jake had a jackknife.
I was trying to teach him a life lesson.
All right, yeah.
Thanks, big bro.
You're welcome, Sam.
Yeah, that's good.
It worked for Tony Iommi. He lost tips.
Hey, yeah, now it's perfect for bass playing.
That's more flatter. That's true.
Yeah. It's a subtle nub that rests on the bass neck.
But it actually works quite well.
Slightly better.
My brother used to beat the shit out of me. Even though I was bigger, I was much thinner. And he would beat the shit out of me. And let's say this is your big toe, right? This is the bottom, this is the top. He would twist my big toe, and I couldn't do anything about it. And he deformed me. And I've been in pain my whole life. And I remember we go to doctors. They're like, we've never seen anything like this before. We don't know what it is. I'm like, yeah, because how many fucking kids are getting their big toe twisted every day? So I'm in pain my whole life. There's nothing I can do about it. So I feel your pain, Sam. I get it.
It sucks, bro.
Sorry,
it sucks
boys.
A big time.
It sucks. All right, yeah. So where did the characters Calabunga and Oliver Reed actually come from? Like, what's the story there? Is Oliver Reed a play on the actual Oliver Reed?
Yeah, well, we love comedy, and we someday want to, you know, get our foot in the door in the comedy world and do maybe perhaps a sketch show or something. Mm-hmm. So we thought we may as well just go for it right now.
Yeah, I think that whole idea, the master classes was a byproduct of having too much time on our hands during the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, we grew up with Python and all of this stuff, so we were kind of getting restless. And, you know what would be really funny is if we just came up with this masterclass thing. And we did we had a bit where I think it was a press conference or something.
Yeah.
Where we actually pulled in a bunch of questions from a bunch of different publications. And we shot this thing, but there was no one in the room. And we didn't answer a single question, like, straight. So I think
it's pretty much just putting us in front of a camera and just performing. You know, like, there's being too much. It's really great because, you know, that's somewhat of what we do. That's the part of it is performance,
right? Of course, I get it. So now
you can see that down the road from us, perhaps, you know, acting a bit or doing some soundtrack or, you know, getting a little bit more into sketch.
Well, didn't I read that Josh wanted to be like a filmmaker actor or something before singing? Is that right?
He pitches about it every day.
Every time something goes wrong, he's like, and you know why I'm not? It's your fault.
There you go. That makes sense. Yeah. So the producer you guys looped in on this is one hell of a producer, Greg Kurstin, who worked with Adele, Paul McCartney, Beck, Foo Fighters, to name a few. Did you guys seek him out? Was he the number one choice? Was he one that you shuffled through? How did that come about?
Yeah, so we kind of went through a dating cycle. Sense. So we'd met with a couple of producers, and
based on the sort of list of objectives being sort of a cinematic approach, it was kind of really apparent that Greg was going to be the producer for the record and our list of ideas. And
I think it was the first person we met with. Is that correct?
Yeah, Greg was the first person we met with, and then we met with a bunch of other one producers, and it was kind of like, well, Greg Kirsten's going to be the guy.
And we sat down with Greg, and we said the concept. We explained the concept of the album we wanted to make, and he nodded his head. We started talking about different albums, different music, and we were all just on the same wavelength. We're talking about the Hans Zimmer.
I mean, what was impressive to me, I suppose us overall, was the fact that he was pulling out film score references and stuff. Because he's like, you know, the musical proficiency of Greg Kirsten goes beyond sort of the average account of like, I'm going to do a pop record or a rock and roll record. It goes into jazz, deep-rooted, you know, influences of like film, and so there's he's a musical index, and it was like he was going to be able to help us out of sticky situations if we were along
the way. Yeah, and it was great being in the studio with Greg too, because he could be a fifth member. He could fit in wherever
musically. He plays music. He plays music as well, I believe, right? He does play music.
He's the most incredible piano player. And just pretty much everything, you know, he can shred on guitar, bass. I would be playing piano for like a song, like say like Light My Love as the first track that we did with Greg. We were just kind of testing the waters, seeing how we wanted to work with him. And, I was like, hey, Greg, why don't you play bass while I'm doing keys? Which is hilarious because he's a much better, you know, piano player than I. He was playing bass and I was playing keys, and that's how we got the basic tracks.
Oh, that's cool.
We were a 5-piece band for that. It was really cool. And I would go back and listen to what he was playing, and then I was inspired by that. So then I had all these different bass melodies that I was doing. So he was just great as a musician and a writer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So let me ask you this. So, Jim, they just said a few minutes ago that they would have a desire to get into comedy, right? And the weird thing I've noticed in my 400 years of doing this shtick is most rock stars want to be comics and most comics want to be rock stars. Did you ever want to be a rock star, Jim?
Of course. Yeah,
it's so fucking weird. It is a weird analogy. I don't know, analogy, but like a whatever you'd call it, like a dynamic where so many rock stars always say that they want to be comedians. And I don't know where or why this comes about. And the better question is, has any rock star ever successfully been a comic? I don't know.
I don't think they have.
That's the best part, is we can just be comedians right now.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, you're not doing a good job.
No, it's true.
Is that funny?
How about that? Is
that funny, Ralph? Actually, it's really interesting because like Monty Python, it was Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin. There was a bunch of rock bands that were producing a lot of that stuff. So George Harrison was involved in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the Kings of Leon going on, like Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something. It's like, I suppose there is some seeming ties between those worlds.
But what's funny, because my regular co-host is a comedian named Big J Okerson, and he always says that when he's doing comedy, he could kind of joke about his problems. But when if he was doing rock, you have to be sincere about it. And it would be too hard for him to be openly sincere about falling in love or broken heart or whatever. It's easier to shit on it as a comic. And that's,
yes.
Yeah, that's what I think. And also, by the way, Jay's a decent singer, and that's probably being kind.
The thing with comedy is like, you know, so we don't have to get along with 4 or 5 other people in the band.
Which
is a positive. But then again, you're touring by yourself. So you're stuck in a hotel room by yourself, isolated away from many friends, because you don't really tour with other comics. It's like local guys. And then also with the comic, you don't have to split the money 5 ways.
Right.
But then you're also up there by yourself. And if you're having a bad show, I can't blame it on the guitar player. I can't blame it on the drummer. He was a little off. He was hungover. It's all on me.
I would say the next bad show you have, Jim, just freak people out and blame it on the guitar player. They don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But
it was his fault over there. You don't see him.
So now the obvious thing, I'm curious, like with the TikTok thing where that was just everywhere, right? When you guys first came out, the thing that was fucking everywhere was, oh, they sound like Led Zeppelin. Oh, it's just like Led Zeppelin. And in fact, when I heard the first Highway tune, I changed the name of it and sent it to some friends of mine and said they discovered a new Led Zeppelin song and people believed it, right? And it just had that vibe. But now I feel with the new record, there is a, while it feels like it's very much a continuation of Anthem, it does feel some of the songs are more elaborate or more robust, where you're trying to somewhat separate yourselves or explore new areas of music. Was that done for that reason, or just because you're musicians and new things inspired you?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, the Ballot Gardens Gate was a pretty organic evolution of what we were doing. I don't think we ever sat down and said, here are our set of objectives, musically speaking. It was just kind of bridging into new territory sort of naturally. And it wasn't like, I think that it, some homage to Anthem, the Peaceful Army, being a part of the Ballot Gardens Gate was simply because it was something we had previously done. And yeah.
So, I never understood it either. Being compared to one of the best rock bands of all time, who gives a fuck? Like, no one's saying, wow, they sound just like Milli Vanilli. That would be a bad thing.
You right. Know? So, no, it was the only irritating,
sound like comedians.
The only irritating thing about it was the irony of, oh, they sound like Led Zeppelin. And like they would say it with such scorn. And you would see it all over the internet. And you could just read it and be like, man, that person was very angry when they said that. It's weird.
It is weird. And it's also like, yeah. And my thought, when people said there's like, yeah, and the problem being like, what's the fucking problem? Big, it's great. It's good song. Who gives a fuck?
It's just like a comic. When you first start out, you're influenced by someone that you liked, you know, that you admired. Yeah. And then eventually you find your own voice.
Right. I mean, I've been working on my airline peanuts joke for a long time. That's just who I am.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the thing is you. It's called inspiration. You're inspired.
Isn't
you see like George Carlin, you're like, man, that's fucking hilarious. Let me do a bit like that.
Yeah. Right. Richard Pryor.
Yeah. I mean, I read Jake that you played Sunshine of Your Love at 12 years old in a guitar store. Be like, oh, that kid's good. I mean, you were just all products of rock and roll. You grew up in a town. Michigan has a ton of fucking classic rock artists coming out of there. So I get it, just makes sense. Why wouldn't you be influenced by your surroundings?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like if what we were doing wasn't organic, or if it was contrived because we were trying to do something that we weren't, I think that would be pretty obvious.
Right.
The thing is, we're sort of, all we can really do is be truthful to the environment we grew up with, the influences that we grew up with. It's like, and I think what Oscar Wilde said it as well, but like, you know, the idea that emulation, emulate, well, that too, but emulation is like the sincerest form of flattery.
It's like, right.
So, you know, it's, or also, yeah. So, I mean, that's really, I mean, it's interesting. All we've really done, and I don't know how much of an offense it is to people and critics, that we've just been who we are. And
that's, right. It's so weird. It is a weird thing. I don't know. People are just, it's just strange. It's like,
yeah,
I never understood why it was a negative. By the way, I don't know which EP it was on. I think it was on the first EP. No, I'm not sure. But your cover of Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come was one of my favorites. That was just such a cool fucking cover that you guys did and showed a different side of you guys. It really got in. That was one of my go-tos for a while with you guys. I really dig that song a lot. The documentation is that there's a Gretna Van Fleet. And that's where the name came from, which has been belabored a lot online. But the woman eventually endorsed it, whatever. I don't think you'd need her approval anyway. Who gives a shit? But the weird thing is, am I right that the original drummer came up with the name? And if so, did he have to pay him off if it was his name and he's not in the band anymore?
Well, we tried to pay him off, but we couldn't find him. Not know where he is.
That's fair enough. So if he's listening, right. You
if
guys
are out there. We've got your money.
And then if this is true, this is my last one, and then we'll do the first. And this is true. This would be badass if it is that your Grammy is over your toilet. Please say that is true.
Mine is. Where's yours?
No, you're not over my toilet. It's a collective thing.
It's like there's a running joke in the music industry. That's where you kind of put your Grammys. You put them in the back.
Yeah, no, I don't think we're the only ones who do.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I don't have a Grammy, so I'm not in on the fucking joke. Okay.
No. Everybody has them these days.
Yeah, you just
buy them. Take that.
So the new album, Battle at Garden's Gate, there's a lot of symbolism and people are exploring what those symbols kind of mean. Is there like a actual answer to all that? Is it up for interpretation? Are you going to be releasing a legend to what each thing fucking actually means? Or is it up to the people to figure it out on their own?
I mean, it's interesting because I think we have an understanding of it being that we sort of created it, but I think the idea really is that it is for interpretation, because obviously it's going to mean something different to everybody.
Mm-hmm. So the answer is it's up for interpretation.
Pretty much, it's kind of on a spectrum of things. You see a symbol and you listen to a song, and the symbol and the song can kind of give you the same feeling. And when you put those together, they're kind of synonymous. And then there's a visual representation, a very simple visual representation for a song, because when we're writing, we're actively talking about what environment are we in. Is it, you know, it's raining and there's a horse running, you know, through a field, and there's lightning striking, you know, so we kind of put ourselves in that environment when we're creating the song and the sonic landscape for that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We thought maybe a visual representation for these songs rather than a numeric one would sort of add a layer to again, like synonymy with the song and this visual representation.
And even the website, it just has, like, if you click each symbol, it takes you to that song. So it lets you know which symbol represents each song. And did you do it intentionally to fuck with blind people that can't be a part of it?
No, we have it in Braille, too.
We have it in Braille.
That's funny, man. Yeah.
And then Jay, I'm about to do the first with the guys.
He said it.
What was that?
We're funny. He just made it.
No, I like it. There's definitely a future there in stand up.
Yeah.
When you guys are on tour.
Ralph.
Yeah, he said a future. I don't know how long of a future, but a future. Jimmy, you have any other questions before we do the first? Because we're almost out of time with these guys.
Well, I just like that. I was just very impressed with the Metallica audience when I saw you guys in Pittsburgh, how they embraced you guys and really enjoyed the show and were totally getting into it, whether they knew the songs or not. Maybe it was the first exposure to you guys. But it was great to see like older dudes being into your music, too, besides the young people that were there. It was inspiring. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most sort of, I guess, shocking things to us in a way is we've opened for Guns N' Roses, and now we've, you know, done the Metallica thing. And the rumor was always going to be those audiences aren't going to be responding to you at all. So to be expecting that, and we show up. And it was Guns N' Roses or Metallica, the first show that we played, and it was pretty much exactly that. There was zero response to it. As a matter of fact, it looked like, you know, it was just like people were bored and not even trying to perceive what we were doing. But as soon as we played the second show, even Metallica or Guns N' Roses, everybody was completely responding to it. And so it's just the weirdest thing for us. I suppose that never became the reality. Everybody seemed to get what we were doing. It maybe took a single show or something, but after that, they'd embraced us.
Yeah, we really don't do any opening slots, but we love Metallica and we love those guys. So whenever we can go out and jump on a date with them, we're always in for it.
Their audiences they're not easy on the openers.
Right.
If they don't like them, they want it heavy and hard. And yeah, they're definitely there to see Metallica. It was really good to see, and Ice Nine Kills too. Also.
Okay. Yeah.
Right, Bill.
And again, they're doing a Metallica. They're doing Metallica. It's hilarious. They'll be opening for Metallica December 16th for the Helping Hands concert and auction. And you go to Greta Van Fleet. All the dates are listed there. And also doing two solo shows, or at least headlining shows, in Atlantic City, the 9th and the 10th of December as well. My question, last question would be, before we do the first, that is that the time you remember, like when the time was where you realized, or did you not, it just happened slowly, when it was no longer just dudes that look like me and Jim in the audience, where it started to be younger audiences? Do you remember the show when you're like, oh, wait a minute, this is changing?
That's a tough call. I really wish that there was that beautiful movie answer. It's like, you know, like you go out on stage and then there's all these beautiful young people with white teeth in front. But it happened kind of slowly. Like it was all older people. And then when we started playing like clubs, then there were young people coming out. Young people were figuring out about it. Because the thing is, we're young.
Yeah. Like, you're like in your mid-20s, all of you, right?
Right, right. And everything, yeah. You know, so people are our same age and younger kind of see us and go, wow, that's not happening. They're playing a kind of music that I really like for some reason. And it's not hip hop and it's not pop and it's not anything I see. So it's just really interesting.
Contemporary.
Well, that would actually, I guess it leads to one question. Because you guys are so popular, have you played on bills with like real pop acts? Like, you know, Greta Van Fleet and Lizzo? Has anything like that ever happened where you were in some sort of like, you know, iHeartRadio show or something like that? Has that happened where it's a lot of pop people?
No. I feel like we have.
Maybe at a festival.
Maybe, perhaps.
Maybe at Download Fest where before a little squeezy or whatever.
Little squeezy. I don't know if that's a real thing.
I think that's
all right. So I'm going to do the first now.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We have asked every guest this question since the dawn of time, which is their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we ask you the first concert you ever went to, but here's the caveat. On your own volition, not one that your parents dragged you to, and ideally something we're going to know, not some stupid local Michigan band we never heard of.
Oh, the Spinning Weasels were.
And it doesn't have to be rock, just the first concert you went to. Yeah.
The Spinning Weasels. I don't know. First?
What about the Motherfuckers?
The Motherfuckers. They're a great band.
Is that a real band? I've never heard of that. I don't believe that for a second.
I actually remember going to a show. I don't know. I think we probably all went. It was a, what's that soul band? Aaron's managing now.
Oh, St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
St. Paul and the Broken Bones at the Fox Theater or
in Detroit. It's one of those Detroit
and theaters. They just blew the place up. It was incredible. I mean, it was like,
how old were you?
I think I was probably maybe just turning 21, maybe.
We didn't go to concerts. We didn't
go
to concerts, no.
Oh, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, that's a good one.
That was at the venue that doesn't exist anymore.
Joe Louis Arena. We're going full on Michigan.
No, that's right. By the way, who was born first, Jake or Josh?
Well, Josh.
Okay.
I should have strangled him in the womb with his pillow.
And now, the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was not your first drug.
Man, this is just hazy. It went probably beer first, maybe some toking of
dimethyltryptamine.
Probably mushrooms.
Mushrooms. And how old were you?
I'm on mushrooms right now.
I believe it.
Not a small amount either. Oh man, I was late to the game with all this because this psychedelics, all the drugs scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, that's the thing. We don't really do a lot of that.
That's fine. I mean, it's also like, by the way, on this show, which I've said many times, so I apologize to the listeners, but the show's called Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, and I had never done a single drug in my life.
He's so done none of those things.
Once a year on the show, I try a drug just because I've never done one. And just 2 weeks ago, I did a Whip It with TJ Miller on the show. You know, and every drug has been on the show. And I've tried them all once and never again. And I've hated every drug so far. But Whippets, I didn't mind because it lasts fucking 30 seconds.
Is that really a drug, not a Whippets?
It is a drug. People, what's his name, died because of that. If I get his name, but someone got addicted to that and like destroyed his life. I don't know. But it is a drug. It can, I don't know. But I've done now 6 different drugs in my life all once.
And they all sucked. You hit.
For me, I'm not made for drugs. But it is what it is.
I think that the hallucinogenics, the bad words for them, psychedelics are really, really something that we're going to see a lot more in the future.
There's a lot of therapy being used right now. Mushrooms are being used.
I think they're for not medical purpose. I think they're for spiritual purpose. I think they have a lot of.
I mean, it's really interesting. Almost every single ancient culture has used some form of psychedelics for, I think, sociologically, a spiritual aspect.
I get so we talk about this a lot on my other podcast, but the thing that I find interesting that we don't know if that's like they always say, well, it's tied to this ancient ways or whatever. They did a lot of dumb shit in the ancient ways. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It just because they did that. I don't know if that's the right answer, but that's the go-to for people that, oh, it's tied to the ancient ways that, you know, they used to do a lot of dumb shit. They would split people's fucking private parts in part with a knife. Does that mean we should go back to doing that? You know, so I don't know what the right answer is, but I do see a lot of my friends that have done, I forget what psilocybin is, the chemical in mushrooms, has helped readjust brains that were not doing well before. So that part, I'm logical. I'm not spiritual. I'm super fucking logical. And I always look at things that way. And then now lastly, which I know you guys are very evasive about this, so feel free to, you don't have to answer these questions, but the first time you had sex.
Age?
Yeah, not the name of the person.
You want an address?
I want the dude's name.
Did someone have to be there?
Did that to prove it? I don't know. I also was pretty late to that too. Okay. I don't know. I think I was probably 19. I was 18 or 19 the first time. And for all the little kids out there, it's like there's no rush to get to it.
There's no right or wrong answer, of course.
And, yeah, I was a month before my 18th birthday.
I was 17 and change as well. I think that's around the most common. Although we've had
someone out there who's, you know, like I know when I was younger, it was like always like pressure, you know, everybody's like having sex and stuff. It's like, oh, what, you know, I'm so scared of this thing that's going on. Take your time. No rush.
Right. There's only
wake up one day and you're 40, that's fine too.
Also fine.
There's no right or wrong answer. The youngest answer, I'm forgetting his name now, the drummer from Godsmack. God damn it, I'm forgetting his name, but he was
Shannon.
Shannon was crazy young, like borderline not healthy young. And then a comedian, Dan Natterman, was like 23, which was the oldest so far.
Nice.
There's no right or wrong answer. All right, so if you go to at Greta Van Fleet on Instagram. Greta Van Fleet beer.
Nice. I didn't know that.
Greta Van Fleet beer. So let's think, what would be a good name for a Greta Van Fleet beer? It's the cold one instead of the cold wind, the cold one. That would make sense.
The cold one. Yeah.
That makes sense. That's a good name. That came to me, bam, I want credit for that.
Well,
all right. So at Greta Van Fleet on Instagram, GretaVanFleet.com has all the information, the new album, Battle at Garden's Gate. Buy it and then debate what those symbols actually mean for you and you alone. But as I said, they're playing in Atlantic City, December 9th and 10th. Opening for Metallica for the Helping Hands concert and auction on the 16th. And then early next year, they will be in India with Imagine Dragons, The Strokes, and a shitload of other bands for Lollapalooza India. Have you guys ever been to India before?
No, never. I suppose that's like quite high on the bucket.
It's high on the list, really? For sure. I think probably we would have in the past couple of years if not for, I don't know, everybody stopped doing shows for a while. I don't know what that was all about.
The Great Black Spot.
Yeah, I don't know why. There's something going on. Yeah. Jim, your plugs. Sorry, Jimmy, your plugs.
Just, you know, I do a podcast, Everybody is Awful, and I have a new comedy special, Bite the Bullets, on Amazon Prime. You can rent or buy it.
That's simple enough. Very simple, to the point. My other podcast is called The Good Sugar Podcast. We're coming out with, we're opening up our first location on 3rd Avenue, 69th Street next month. But you could follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. And guys, thank you for being a part of the podcast. We add a song every week to the sdrshow.com/playlist. It'll be My Way soon. That's my favorite song on the new record, so we'll add that one. And guys,
wait, let me say one thing.
What's your plug?
My plug is that I am doing a show at Zany's. anyway,
oh, that would be
one thing that we that I missed that I wanted to go about is the My Way Soon thing. Is that we pretty much decided to release it at that point of the pandemic when everything was dark and, and everybody was sad and alone. And it was like it's the most positive song on the album, and it's just like the most hopeful, like fun loving thing. And we wanted to get that out there and kind of perhaps make the world a slightly better place.
Well, what about the fact that it's 2 years later and I'm still sad and alone?
That's on you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for being part of the SDR show. Thank you, Jim. We'll see you all next time on the Sex, Drugs, Rock, Roll podcast.
Until next time, handsome fellows.